There's not a pen gavel.
Council, we're going to go ahead and start council meeting. It is Tuesday, March 17th, 2020, at 7:15 p.m. and we are meeting in the Cedar Hills Community Center. We will start with a pledge led by not council member Smith. Who would like to give a pledge?
I haven't done it for a long time.
We will do a pledge given by council member Geddes, and then I will give the invocation.
All right.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Heavenly Father, we are grateful for the opportunity that we have tonight to meet together and to discuss the needs of our community. We are grateful for this wonderful city in which we live and for the residents here and for all of the staff members who work here. And we're grateful for their diligence and the efforts that they put forth to make our community so wonderful. We pray this evening that we will be able to discuss the needs of our community and make decisions that will benefit our residents, and we pray for our community, state, and country at this time with the struggles that we are facing. We pray for these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
All right, on to item number two. I will take a motion or take an approval of the meeting's agenda.
I move that we approve the meeting's agenda.
Motion made by Councilmember Anderson. Is there a second?
A second.
Second by Councilmember Miller. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nobody else.
Motion passes unanimously. Moving on to item number three, which is public comment. Nobody from the public is here, unless anybody wants to speak from staff. Okay, we will close our public comment portion and move on to item number four, the consent agenda, which is an approval on the correction of the minutes from December 3rd, 2019, to the council meeting. The correction is to read Cedar Ridge Elementary School into the Deer Grove, with regarding the monarch butter license. Somebody would like to make that motion.
I move that we approve the consent agenda.
Motion made by Councilmember Anderson. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilmember Elder. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Move on to item six, city report, starting with Johnson.
I hope you're all able to read the email you sent out last night regarding the city's response to the virus that's going around. I want to just say it into the records so the public are aware of it too. As with everything that's going on right now, much of what we're doing revolves around our response to the coronavirus. The city has implemented the following actions. All recreation programs have been postponed. This includes high fit and bar classes. Depending on the severity of the pandemic, this may affect spring registration and recreation offerings. Those are going to be evaluated in the coming week. All arts theater programs have been postponed as well. Cedar Hills youth theater production has been halted. Practices and performances have been canceled. The city is honoring contracts with private events. However many of these events are canceling. In each of these cases, the city is working with the client to refund money paid except for deposits. That's in line with what other reception centers are doing. The golf course for the time being remains open. Governor Herbert has said the golf remains a safe activity. I have directed staff to continually wipe down carts and sanitize the pro shop throughout the day. City offices have moved to a limited schedule for the next 2 weeks in an attempt to limit face-to-face interactions. For our temporary office hours, I'd encourage you to see the city website. Passports have also been limited and are now by appointment only. Public works crews are working in two swing shifts from 6 to 12 and from 12 to 6. While we're working out the kinks in this change of the schedule, staff is expected to be responding and working as best they can from home. We have laid out the expectations of what their response to any community or resident inquiries will be. So we'll be following up with that continually. If you hear any questions about that from the community, I want to hear about it. The city has offered to help other surrounding cities in case other entities are having problems meeting their basic service obligations. At this time, the city is committed to providing essential services, meaning water and sewer, at normal service levels. You would expect normal disruptions in those in the time being. Other services that the city offers are still available, but there may be a delay in receiving answers or feedback on inquiries. While no decisions have been made on services or events past the governor's two-week period, we anticipate making decisions about city events such as Easter egg hunt, PI system coming on April 15th in the coming days. However, the city council's scheduled ULCT training next month in St. George has been canceled. If you did not see that email come through. We are staying in contact with our residents by sending out emails, letting them know what the city is doing, trying to make work through these challenging times. Residents that want to be informed should make sure that their contact information with the city is up to date. If they have any questions on that, I would ask them to please reach out to the front desk. That's all I have right now.
Thank you. I'm going to take the next one. I'm sure that you all heard the most recent directive from the president was that people should avoid gatherings larger than 10 people. Today, the Utah State Health Department closed down all indoor dining effective, I believe it's tomorrow at midnight. So, takeout options are still available, but statewide for the next 2 weeks, there will be no indoor dining allowed. So we do need to talk about, or we will address that.
I'll take a step.
Okay. There was a call today with Governor Herbert and Lieutenant Governor Cox and local leaders. They have put on a weekly call, and I will be on that call each week, and I'll give you guys an update of how that goes. Today, there wasn't anything significant as far as new news, other than the update on the numbers, which is at 51 now. But they did say that they are looking at making some changes to code. The big one would be, right now, if we want to have an electronic meeting, we're required to have an anchor location, and they would like to modify that where a phone could be the anchor location. So that way, if councils or planning commissions or whatever don't want to have anybody that needs to be in the building, they won't have to. So we will hear if that change, those changes are made. County health departments, they did reiterate, are the ones that, generally speaking, have the decision-making authority on what gets closed and what doesn't. But yes, Governor Herbert did say today people should be outside and walking, which is great. That's the only thing I have as far as updates on that. We're working really closely with the state. Senator Romney's going to have a call with elected leaders tomorrow, so I will be on that. You know, I hear anything other different than that, but we'll just keep you in constant contact as changes are made. Move forward from there. Councilmember Anderson.
Yep, so I attended my Central Utah 911 meeting last Thursday. They are proposing to increase pay for dispatchers to stay competitive because we're losing dispatchers to other places like Spanish Fork pays more, so they lure them away. So
New York City has their own.
Springville. Oh, Springville. Thank you. Yeah, Springville. Springville. Thank you. So they're looking to raise, if you have like 3 years experience, they want to raise it to $20 an hour and then $18 for 2 years and $17.24 for starting. So they're also billing cities quarterly for actual usage, which saves cities money. PG joined Central Utah 911, and they are bringing some employees with them to accommodate for the extra call volume, which they need to be 10% more than what they're handling right now. And Heidi Haley from PG is now the operations manager down there. And they also want us to promote, I don't know, maybe we can even do this in the city. They want people to be aware that you can text 911. A lot of people aren't aware, and that might be a good public service announcement that we can give to our residents to know that they can text 911. They don't even have to say anything, you know, they just put it in. And
if you do 911, it actually...
911 send. And
Washington?
It goes to the dispatch. So they want to promote that.
No idea.
And that's all I have.
Nothing from me.
Nothing for me.
That's what we're getting.
No, my sustainability is going remote, so yep. That's next week.
Most of my need for council this week. I think that's going to be the case for a while. All right, moving on then to our scheduled items. Item number 7 is a review action for the hearing on preliminary plan approval for the Reinhardt subdivision, Plat B, located at approximately 10040 North, 4800 West in the SC1 commercial zone. I'm going to open the public hearing first. Is there anybody here that wants to speak on item number 7? Okay, we will close the public hearing.
Chairman. Okay. This is the parcel of land that surrounds the Hartz gas station. The owner of the land is seeking to subdivide for future development. At this time, there are no buildings or structures that are planned. That's why the civil engineering packet is limited to just a sidewalk. We're not asking them to develop that, show what's in it until we actually see some development. So there will be future discussions about this land. The current proposal is to divide the undeveloped portion of the land from the developed portion of the Hartz gas station in order to sell or lease to a future buyer. The subdivision would create a new lot that is about 2 acres in size, and frontage improvements have been completed for this lot all the way around. There's 4700 that's completed by David Weekly Homes, and then there's the south entrance. I always forget what that address of the road is, but that's also been completed. The only portion of sidewalk that's not completed is along 4800 North County Boulevard, and so in your packet you see there's the only drawing is for improvements is for a sidewalk to be completed along that portion of the road with a slight meander around one of the existing power poles. The cost, so the city in the past has worked with developers, David Weekly Homes and the Gateway individuals to build that road, 4700 West, an entrance off of North County Boulevard, the front off of the Hart's gas station. As part of any commercial development, the developer is required to pay for the frontage improvements for their piece. Where the city has fronted this, we are requesting them to enter into an agreement or to reimburse the city for those costs. Because we wanted those roads completed. Those roads, as part of the traffic plan, could not remain halfway done for the time being. They had to be done now. That land was deeded over to the city when Hart's gas station was completed, so we were able to do that. But it is the responsibility of the developer to pay for their frontage improvements. So I've been in touch with the owner of the parcel in terms of this is the expectation that this will be reimbursed to the city. And until something has been worked out, I would propose that we pass this tonight, but then hold up until we have finalized some of those agreements.
Is that common to retroactively ask people to make
agreements? No, I don't think it is.
Well, but we did tell them before that they were going to be responsible for it.
Yeah, we've been trying to get this completed for a couple of years now.
Okay.
So
did we put up the money?
Yeah, we put up the money. So
otherwise that road would have had
so every time we've tried reaching out to him and I've had this discussion with him a number of times, but he's never agreed to anything.
Who was the owner?
Dave Jardine,
yeah.
So I wanna use what any leverage that he has to enter into an agreement saying, hey, we need to sign these agreements that you're responsible for these frontage improvements.
Does he have a number, or do you
give
him a number?
I have a number, yes. But because there's no utility improvements that are being proposed, there's really no engineer drawings to review other than the sidewalk. Staff has requested the submission of a detail sheet for the installation of the sidewalk, which is in your packet. But this will go to final, but I'd like to meet with the parcel owner in the meantime before now and the final approval is given.
Does anyone have concerns with that contingency?
No, I feel like you can negotiate it.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, it's an oddly shaped lot. What can be put behind
the parts? For a long time, they proposed a car wash back there. It's an acre. It's enough land to do something with. It's an acre on the back and an acre on the side, so they're both able to be developed. Mm-hmm.
But it looks like the plan is that they're going to sell it, so we don't know what the proposal
could be.
Yeah.
It's just, it looks a little bit oddly shaped.
I've seen some conceptual drawings for some plans, and they show multiple ads, but that's not anything that they're proposing tonight.
He's not the underlying, I mean, he was the original owner, but the Hart's actually,
Hart's
is
sold.
That just a lease?
Oh, it's Hart's sold. So Hart owns the company. Two, maybe 3 years ago. Maybe.
So they own their land, though. I mean, they don't just
the Hart's. I believe it's that Jardine still own that piece.
Oh, they
of
do. Okay, so that's what
all,
I thought.
All land assets remain the same.
Yeah. Okay. Which, even though it is odd, if Jardine has the ability, he could adjust it. Okay.
All right. I'll take a motion on that. For no further questions.
I'll make the motion to approve the preliminary plan for the Reinhardt subdivision as presented, subject to the conditions presented to us regarding the sidewalk and those things.
I'll second that.
Motion by Councilmember Ellsworth and seconded by Councilmember McGinnis. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously. We'll move on to item number 8, which is a review action on amending the city's mileage reimbursement policy.
In our policies and procedures, our current policies allow for travel reimbursement to be at 58 cents a mile. There's not a cap to that, and there's not a disclaimer that if the city's vehicle is available for use and you choose to use your own personal vehicle, that the city won't, or you get your mileage at a reduced rate. Additionally, some people choose to drive a personal vehicle even when a city pool car is available, or if a city pool car is not available, they choose to drive And that's fine, but sometimes the cost of reimbursing them for the mileage exceeds the cost of an airline ticket. So we're, this is the city's... Right. Yeah, so this
well, depends
is...
On
where are they going?
St. George.
Oh.
Vegas.
Is
that us?
No, it could
have been. There are a lot of trains in St. George.
Most of the long distance trains are in St. George, and to do a mileage reimbursement on that, you're looking at about $350. A ticket, if you plan ahead, is about $220. So the policy is that, one, if the city's designated pool car is available, that's the primary means of travel for employees attending any training. Two, in the event that a pool car and other designated Cedar Hills vehicles are not available, the city employee may be authorized to use a personal vehicle as approved by the city manager designee, and that should be reimbursed at the official rate that the IRS sets, up to a point that it doesn't exceed the cost of an airline ticket.
A discount airline.
If it exceeds, and that we'll only reimburse up to that point. And we'll work with them on that. And then three, if a city employee chooses to use a personal vehicle when the pool car is available, they only be reimbursed at the GSA rate of 17 cents per mile. And that's being measured from city office to conference location, not all the sidebars in between.
And just to clarify, this policy would apply to staff and elected officials.
And elected officials as well, yes. This was an attempt to try to get ahead of training budgets as we try to keep those in check. Mm-hmm. I know that we're not going to ULCT next month now, but should we all have gone to ULCT, I would have taken a city pool car, so there would not have been one available to the legislative officials. So if each of you were to drive, you'd be spending almost $1,500 on gas. So we can try to carpool, but it still is, in my view, an excessive expense at some point. So I'm trying to rein that in.
So the only questions I've got, I used to travel a ton, is you're also, what I would do is I would take the airport shuttle, because I just didn't want to deal with any of that stuff. So, yeah, making sure the shuttle or a rental car is accounted for, and then parking at an airport, if that were the case. So making sure it covers more than just the airfare itself, it's to and from an airport.
Do you get reimbursed for parking at the airport when you travel?
Yeah, it's expensive. So, you do the long-term a lot, but if you're out for 4 days, it adds up.
Yeah.
So, but it shouldn't be, I still think it will fall underneath what you're trying to do. It'll be less than $350 for sure.
We're also trying to incentivize staff to use city vehicles rather than personal vehicles.
How many city vehicles are available?
There's one pool car that's designated pool car. Recreation also has a truck that's for them, their department over here. But each department has vehicles, and so there's enough, I feel like there's enough vehicles in the fleet that there should generally be a vehicle that is available. Sometimes in the spring, right now, typically is a very busy time for conferences. And so sometimes you can get staffed up and there is a need for an employee to drive a personal vehicle, but it should be the outlier, not the standard.
Any other questions?
So if they drive a pool car, is there
there's a gas car being associated with cities? Yeah. They just have to use appropriate gas vehicles.
The only downside is they might have to reimburse the employees that are here using their personal vehicles because someone took the pool car.
Right.
But,
it's usually only a few dollars. Yeah, if they choose to come in.
All right.
Well, that sounds good to me.
A motion. Are there any modifications?
The includes the cost of parking at the airport and the cost of the shuttle.
Yeah, just a reasonable estimation. Reasonable estimation of what that would look like. So I'll make the motion. I move that we approve to amend the city's policies and procedures manual related to travel reimbursement, subject to the following modifications, of including consideration for parking at the airport or airport shuttle costs.
since that would be the trip to a conference.
Motion made by Councilor Elsberg. Is there a second?
A second.
Second by Councilor Miller. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Move on to item number 9, which is review action on the smart irrigation controller policy.
As requested.
This is actually a resolution.
Yes, this is a resolution. In the resolution, body of the resolution, you see that we've tried to define what a water sense, we're trying to get away from the smart water meter controller or smart water controller and just name them water sense so that when people go looking for them, they're looking for the right thing. So we're trying to call it the water sense. So water sense labeled irrigation controllers act like a thermostat in your sprinkler system, telling you when to turn on and off. They use local weather and landscape conditions to tailor watering schedules to actual conditions on site. Water sense labeled controllers allow for watering schedules to match the plant's needs better. But hopefully by installing these water sense irrigation controllers within the city, we'll provide a watering alternative that will hopefully save the city some water. And the water sense irrigation controllers are required to be registered by the city to be qualified for the alternative watering schedules. So I've met with staff, and in order to register these, this is what we've come up with, that the resident must show proof of purchase, along with an identifying information unique to that specific controller, some number that's unique to that specific one. I don't really know what those are off the top of my head, and also we want to see a photo of the installation being completed.
So I got a question for that.
Yes.
Because I purchased mine here, I have no proof of a person last year, I don't know.
I was going to say, people who already have one, they may not.
So we may need to work on that part.
Mm-hmm.
But so I can give you a picture of it. Just
I think if it's...
But they do have a unique identifier.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. So if we, then maybe we don't need the purchase. Maybe we just need the unique identifier and proof of installation.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. Any concerns with that, Jeff?
No, that's reasonable. And I know there are a number of them already installed.
Yes, there are. For all other residents, we're going to continue with the current watering restrictions on the watering days. Then you can see the bullet or item number 4. You can see what those fines are. There's a warning on the first violation, $50 fine for the second violation, and subsequent violations are $200. And then we try to provide some information. And we'll push that out to the residents when in the upcoming weeks, as we get ready to enter into the irrigation season, we'll push this policy, making sure that they're aware of
it. Any other questions?
Sorry, can I have one
question? Yes, please.
This also exempts them from Sunday water, so they can water on Sunday if they have their sugar control.
You want to work the way it's supposed to work.
Mm-hmm.
All right, somebody wants to make that motion. It's a resolution. Yes.
I'll make that motion. Okay.
You don't have it, I have it.
I just have it. I move that we approve Resolution 3-17-2020A, adopting the irrigation smart controller policy with the change that requires no proof of purchase.
Motion made by Councilmember Anderson. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilmember Gittes. Councilmember Anderson.
Councilmember Elsberg. Right. Councilmember Miller. Right. Councilmember Gittes. Right. Motion passes unanimously. Move on to item number 10, which is a discussion on fiscal year 2021 budgets. Okay. Alright. Kyle's not here, so you guys know most of this stuff. I'll just skip over what we've done in the last few years. You want to read it for your own review? This is kind of just all the big expenses we've had.
Can I ask a question?
Years. Yeah.
Where exactly is the Harvey Well? Is it by
Harvey Park?
Park.
That big building on the south part of
Heritage Park.
It's
by the pavilion.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, the building behind the pavilion.
The little building right there.
Gotcha.
It has a hole in it.
Sorry.
So there's been quite a few major repairs the last few years. And there's, we'll talk about later, there's probably some more changes down the road. Last year, pretty typical year, about 25-26% of operating expenses were related to personnel And then the other major expenses, got another about 25-26% to debt service. Our payment we make to Tupanovi Special Service District for sewer. And then our electrical the last couple of years has been down, I think, because we had a really wet spring. We haven't had to pump as much. About 3 years ago, it was at 330, so 280 is a good number for us. Water purchases is going up. We have about an $8,000 increase from CEP each year going forward. And Jeff, a certain percent equals to be about $8,000 right now. Then we have our motor pool, and then the rest of the expenses are capital improvements that we've made in the last year. Most of those were related to Harvey Park. And then meter maintenance expenses we had in the last year. So water maintenance and summer drain maintenance expenses. So several years ago, TSSD was, let's say 2011, was really high. And now this year, the last year and a half, it's been, so you can see 2019 is the yellow. It's one of the higher lines. And then the dashed line is pretty high. So we are spending more there in the last year and a half.
So this is off of a meter of our outfall. We have a couple outfalls that sort of all the flow effluent leaves the city and enters really AF. There's a meter there that kind of tells us what's going through that. This type of rise is, I would say, uncommon. We might have areas of our system that have a higher portion of what's called INI, inflow and infiltration. It's like leaks in your system where you're being metered on what's going through your pipe. And if you have a crack in your pipe, if water is getting into your pipe from groundwater sources, you're being metered for that water. So that's surprising.
How do we figure out that?
We have to camera the lines. That's really the only way. We have a newer system though, so our system should be fairly tight. But there could be an issue somewhere. So this might be something as a staff or working in conjunction with TSSD, we may want to review and look at and see how that, if that is the case. If that is the case, that's something we can do about. If it's not the case, then we just have a higher usage.
Yeah, it's interesting though. We had a really wet spring, and you can see last 2019, the number went up.
So to me, that suggests
shows that, yeah, when we are getting rain, moisture, it seems like we are having higher readings on our fields.
So is that on the list of things to do this year then, to do that?
It's something that we're continually working with Timberdog Special Service District as they're coming out cameraing these lines. It's trying to find a needle in a haystack in terms of where the line that's compromised is. And so we'll work with them on that. But usually they have a schedule that they come out and we work with them on. But they're jetting lines during that time. But Jeff, I mean, how often do we put those cameras?
Typically they will camera the entire city every 5 years. We have had them cameraing in specific areas at a higher rate. We do know we have one line that does collect water down on that cottages area.
So we may want to find those projects and get those done and taken care of. I know that this is a problem throughout the district. This isn't just a Cedar Hills issue. They showed us a line a couple of weeks ago where they have a crack in this line down by the lake and it's just gushing water. You've been down to the treatment plant. Every drop of water that goes into the treatment plant, they treat, so it's treating unnecessary water, so we want to keep that out if we can. And that'll reduce some of our expenses there as well.
And the one we do know that we're collecting water in is on our list for repair this summer.
Is it a line or a manhole?
It's a manhole that is settled, but when the air gauge and it rains,
so
it
cools
and
yeah.
it goes in the lid. And that's the only one we're really aware of. We are investigating.
Just a friendly reminder of how much our city is growing compared to other cities. Can't really, ours doesn't really register compared to our neighbors, but. And so we're not using any impact fees for these projects for the last several years. We've had to just use our user fees.
So when we get that, when we do collect impact fees, and we use them for an approved project, that becomes unrestricted money for the city.
So, pending projects in the next 10 years, maybe or longer, if it's your opinion. These are some of the ones for this fund that could happen, whether it's the PRV is still in process. That was funded for this year, but it hasn't happened yet, right?
Right. Yeah, and that one's on. Depending on what scope we want to do. We have no secondary valve for our main water source for the upper zone of the city. After this would be entailing redundancy. So
that's a delivery kind of natural disaster or
just wear tear if the valve fails. We have no way to get water into the upper zone of the city while we repair it.
Okay.
So we're looking at a redundant so we can shift from one valve to another. We can repair one valve and maintain it while it's flowing back and forth.
Hopefully we don't have to replace a valve or build one new.
Are we looking at quarterly?
We talked on the long-term project, and it keeps coming up as the next thing to do.
It keeps getting punted. It's been on the docket for a while. The Cottonwood well is set up to set up a chlorination station very easily. The Harvey well, less so, and that's just because when you chlorinate your water, you have to have a certain amount of contact time between the chlorine and the water before it hits your first service location, and where the Harvey Well is located, the service location is next door, so you're within like, what, 100 feet
or less.
Mm-hmm. So you have to find a way to have that water and chlorine have a certain amount of contact time before it hits that location. So we're not totally certain how we have to do that. We have to work with our engineers on how to get that set up. But there are other options out there. I think we kind of keep this on the docket just because there's always that outlier that the state could mandate that systems aren't chlorinated.
That hasn't been discussed recently.
I think that it came up when it was being discussed, but it's never really been, it hasn't been a priority for the state lately.
Okay.
So that's why it keeps getting.
I've never listed it as a next year item, but it's just one of those things.
Well, our tests have never come back with any elevator levels of bacteria or anything.
We have had positive bacteria tests, but when we've gone through the state compliance to double check those, we found that they're really. There's probably more of a problem with sampling than with the water.
That's good.
In an emergency, if we did have something that we included the system, we can put in portable units to temporarily clean the system. So I think we're covered all right. We don't have one, but we can get one if we need it.
Not be watching what's it with Sandy, but if with a fluoride guy.
Yeah, that's why you want to get the contact time right. You mess that up, they'll know.
I have a no chlorine unless you need it first.
Yeah. Okay. So, I guess the biggest change from the Bowen and Collins rate stuff is bringing the sewer rate down 6.7%. Because the lack of projects and the operating cost coverage we currently have with our current revenues. The storm drain and water fees still don't fully cover operating expenses, and so I feel better about raising those, but really one easily does. So I'm trying to get them more true to what we're actually spending. And
will those rate increases do that?
We'll get it closer. You know, I'm still a little bad now, so. But you'll see that sewers are one of our biggest rates right now, so you'll see the overall impact actually. Sewer impacts get more than the other ones. And then that puts our debt service coverage at about 1.5 and our minimum is 1.25. So we're still good even with that. It's better right there. So what does that do? It's if you're using 8,000 gallons, it's about a 0.5% increase. If we adjust for our contract amount for garbage and the projected garbage and projected recycling, that's just a rough estimate. I don't have real numbers yet there. And then the based on projected increases to public safety. So even with those, I'm only showing a 0.5% increase overall. And that's at 8,000 gallons. If you use smaller, I think our average, as our households have gotten smaller, is more towards 6,000, and so that's still 0.8, so less than 1% overall. Any questions on those? Usually, I think later on in May when we do the preliminary budget, I'll show you other cities' rates, but I wanted to just show you how it compares to our home. This one. Try to make sense of it. So. Anyways, that's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Chandler, a while ago, I think it was Jeff, somebody put together a map of all of our water infrastructure, where the wells were. Will you send that to the council? Because I think that was a long time ago.
Yeah,
that would be great. That was on the, was that the PI map that kind of showed?
Yeah, it showed all the PI lines, it showed where the pump stations were, and the water.
That's always one of those apps I've got to do with the server front. So that might be it, yeah. That being said, though, if we send out maps of our culinary water system, we like to keep them a little close in house.
Oh, yeah. Any massive infrastructure underground should be kept on
there. If we present it in a council meeting, then it's open to the public. If we don't, if we try to keep those infrastructure maps.
You just brought that into the email confidential.
That one I think we presented to.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, okay. It's just culinary.
Okay, moving on to item number 11, review action on a resolution approving the 2019 municipal wastewater planning program.
Yes, so the city has two permits for pollutant discharge. This is issued by the Department of Environmental Quality, and each year we need to send them an annual report, and we have to present it to council, verify to them that council has reviewed and approved what needs to happen in order to keep our system working. So that's our storm drain system and our sanitary sewer system. This today is the sanitary sewer system. Our report is ready to be submitted. We have had a really good year. We've had no overflows, we've had no backups, and we've had no break in our lines, so we've been very fortunate. We added 11 new connections, businesses, homes, and added new sewer mains on Canyon Road as part of that project. And this is Charles reference, we don't have outstanding project for our sanitary sewer any longer. We have two homes on Canyon Road that is, they are unable to connect to our sewer this time, or very easily connect. Sometime in the future, hopefully, we'll be able to make that connection if some boundary adjustments are done. Other than that, as that division reviewed that, if there's any questions, I'd entertain information.
Thank you.
Council. I read the report. You had to fill in and majority scoring.
It's an odd report.
Yeah, it really was. I'm like, this is so, did they make you do this? No, but I appreciate you doing that. That's great.
Any questions from the council? But not under the motion.
This is our second resolution, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll make that motion. I move that we approve resolution number 3-17-2020B, a resolution approving the 2019 municipal water wastewater planning program, collection system, and financial evaluation.
Motion made by Councilmember Anderson. Is there a second?
Second up.
Seconded by Councilmember Ellsworth. Councilmember Anderson.
Aye.
Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
Councilmember Davis.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Item 12 is review action on a resolution dissolving the Cultural Arts Citizens Advisory Committee.
Yeah, when we have a certain cities, or we have certain committees in the city that have a narrow scope of work or they stop meeting, and so when the time comes for them to be dissolved, we do like to get them off the books just so we're not showing that we have an outstanding committee that doesn't meet. One of those committees is the Cultural Arts Citizens Advisory Committee. They were originally formed to promote arts and theater within the community. This has kind of morphed into the youth theater program that is now temporarily on a hiatus, but nonetheless still very vibrant and active. So with that, with kind of a change in their scope of work, we're requesting that the Cultural Arts Citizens Advisory Committee be dissolved by this resolution.
We haven't met for what?
Honestly, over 3 years.
3 years?
It's been a while. This should have been dissolved a while ago, I think.
Well, let's dissolve it.
Any questions? No.
I'll make the motion to approve resolution 3-17-2020C, dissolving this Cultural Arts Citizens Advisory Committee of the City of Cedar Hills, Utah.
Motion made by Councilmember Ellsworth. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilmember Geddes. Councilmember Anderson.
Aye.
Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
Councilmember Geddes.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Moving on to item 13, which is a review action on a resolution amending the duties, membership, and terms of office of the County Council of Citizens Advisory Committee.
The mayor has been going through the policies and procedures for each of our committees, and she's made a lot of great recommendations that work with her on this. So the Family Festival Citizens Advisory Committee, I don't believe this has been reviewed since 2014. It's been a while. But under, I'm just going through the proposed changes. Under part two, purpose and duties, we've added number 5 to prepare an agenda and minutes at all meetings where the quorum is present. This is to comply with the Open Public Meetings Act. And then that's because they do deal with public funds. So we want to make sure that they're held accountable for the money that's been allocated to them. And then in D, we're changing the committee from 12 to 10 to 15 regular members. And then E, to being more in compliance with what they're currently doing and how they're currently operating, is to change the term from 3 years to 1 year, and that renews automatically unless they're given notice to the city council or asked to resign. And then finally, under compensation, that they may be reimbursed if prior approval is received by the city manager. That's just to formalize that for accounting purposes. Any questions on these proposed committee changes?
That's great.
I have a question about the formation of the committee. So they have a chair and a secretary.
They do.
So they do. So they're already set up to be taking minutes and to be recording these things.
They should. And I think it's more of an effort on staff's part and the council, really, to make sure that's happening at this committee meetings. That when you have one of those meetings that are made of citizens, that you look for a reporter. So we've purchased smaller reporters that are located in this building and our building, our main city office building, that we can easily record a meeting and give that recording to Colleen, and she can upload that to the city website. Minutes don't have to be comprehensive like what you've seen for the city council. They really just need to show a basic deliberative action and any motions that are made, who made the motion. But really, when you're expending the money, that's the information that we need.
The date and time and who's there.
Yes. So it really can be very basic information. It doesn't need to be very in-depth. So for
council, if you sit, we are the liaison for these committees, you show up We just remind the chair to sign somewhere to finish for the meeting, the NANA.
And it might be a good idea for staff to have a pre-prepared form for these meetings to say what time the meeting adjourns. It's almost like they're just filling out a sheet, basically.
Okay.
I think that'd be something that we could put together to help these committees along.
Yeah.
Any questions?
Chandler, this is Craig. I got one. Why the number 10 instead of an odd number?
That's a great question. I've never been to one of the family festival committees where they're really taking it. Each of the chairs are responsible for a particular activity. So we on the committee, we have somebody who's responsible for the parade, somebody who's responsible for the swim night, someone who's responsible for the dinner. So they're really just reporting to the committee what they're working on. The committee as a whole isn't voting on those individual items because they all have their own specific responsibility. Does that make sense? So we did it as a 10 because sometimes they have struggled to keep more than 10 people on the committee. Every year it changes a little bit, but I've never seen less than 10.
Okay, I was just wondering.
Yeah. Any other questions? If not, I'll take a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve resolution number 3-17-2020D, a resolution amending the purpose and duties, membership, and term of office of Family Festival Citizens Advisory Committee of the City of Cedar Hills, Utah.
Motion made by Councilmember Miller. Is there a second? Seconded by Councilmember Anderson. Councilmember Anderson.
Aye.
Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
Councilmember Dez.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. I will take a motion to adjourn.
I make a motion to adjourn.
Motion made by Councilmember Dez. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Miller. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? We are adjourning. Go home. Wash your hands.